Kia ora and welcome to Goodfellow Podcasts. This episode is kindly supported by the Royal New Zealand College of General Practitioners, the Auckland faculty. I'm Dr. Louise Kugler, a specialist GP, and I'm delighted to introduce our two guests today, Dr. Jim McLeod and Dr. Amanda Ng. Today we're discussing workplace exposure to carcinogens, what the primary care team need to know. We'll also be talking about the recently released New Zealand Carcinogen Survey. Jim's background is that he was employed by WorkSafe New Zealand and was involved in discussions about the contents of the New Zealand Carcinogen Survey. After leaving WorkSafe, he was involved in peer review of the results. He works as an independent occupational health advisor. Amanda is a senior research officer at the Research Centre at Massey University. She has considerable experience in conducting epidemiological studies in the field of occupational exposure and health. Kia ora to you both and welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So today we're discussing workplace exposure to carcinogens, and the New Zealand Carcinogen Survey, as I mentioned, was released in March 2023. And it examines the prevalence of occupational exposures. So we're going to be talking a lot about that today. So Amanda, I wonder if we can just start with what percentage of workers are exposed to carcinogens in the workplace in New Zealand?
Sure. So just a bit of background. So this survey was commissioned by WorkSafe in 2021 and, as you mentioned, released earlier this year. It is the first survey to examine the prevalence of occupational carcinogens in the working population in New Zealand, which is really important because information on carcinogens in the workplace has been lacking in New Zealand to date. So the findings of the survey suggest that more than half of workers in the sample are exposed to at least one carcinogen at work at any level, and nearly 30% are exposed at a high level above what is considered safe. As well as that, almost one in four are exposed to five or more carcinogens at any level. Now, it's not entirely clear if the estimates can be generalised to the wider working population of New Zealand because of the sampling, but regardless, the prevalence of exposure is unacceptably high from these results.
So what were the most common carcinogens that were seen in the survey?
So the survey found that if we just focus on the top 10 most common carcinogens across all industries, and the first one was benzene, where the main tasks associated were fueling vehicles and equipment with petrol, using petrol and other solvents to clean hands, and using solvent-based paint. So that was the number one. And then solar UV, ocular UV, diesel engine exhaust, environmental tobacco smoke, styrene, crystalline silica, shift work, wood dust, and other polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons. So those were the top 10 most common carcinogens reported in the survey.
And most of us as healthcare professionals will have worked shift work, or some of us may still be working shift work. So what is it about shift work, Jim, that makes it a carcinogen?
That's probably still a relatively unanswered question, but the assumptions are that it's because it's the changes in circadian rhythms that are induced by shift work. We're certainly aware that there are many health issues that come along with shift workers, but it's only a more recent finding in the last 10 or so years that we're starting to realise that it seems to be increasing the risk, particularly for some forms of cancer. And it appears that this is coming around to the circadian rhythm disturbance, the body clock, and probably something to do with hormonal release associated with that body clock disturbance. Many of the practitioners that are listening today will be well aware of many of the other health issues that we see associated with shift work, like gastrointestinal disturbance, sleep disorders, and the like. And we're really unsure of whether these things are a direct contribution to the carcinogenicity of the shift work or whether it's actually a more underlying process that's going on. But there's something definitely going on. It definitely increases your risk of developing some forms of cancer.
Okay, so when we're taking an occupational history, what industries or occupations do we need to be particularly aware of, Jim?
I think you've raised a really important point, and if I may just briefly talk about that first. I think an occupational history is an incredibly important question for health practitioners to ask, particularly in the primary care setting. It's a magnificent relationship opener that helps establish a relationship with your patient and helps hopefully open a more productive therapeutic relationship with that patient as they understand that you understand what it is that they do for a job, which is a really important part of their life. Of course, some jobs are not paid, which we also have to remember. Occupational history gives you an understanding of potential exposures. And unless you ask that question, you're not going to know. And so the particular industries and occupations that we need to be aware of are those that I guess I would call dirty, but this survey would call things like mining, electricity, gas, water and waste services, construction, transport, postal and warehousing, agriculture, forestry and fishing. These particular areas have the most significant exposures as found by our survey, and that the occupations exposed to the highest average number of carcinogens were construction workers, farmers, and emergency workers. And when we think about some of those cancer-causing substances that people are exposed to, when we think about things like benzene or solar UV, shift work and the like, diesel engine exhaust, these things start to make sense in the context of construction workers, farmers, and emergency workers.
So just wondering, Amanda, thinking about risk, are there sex and ethnic variations in exposure and risk?
So the survey reported that the distribution of exposure, which is not necessarily the same as risk, but the distribution of exposure to carcinogens differs by gender and ethnicity. So in particular, the survey reported that Māori and Pacific workers and men are the most likely to be exposed to at least one carcinogen at any level. And the top 10 carcinogens are also different across the ethnic groups. For example, a higher proportion of Māori and Pacific workers reported exposure to night shift work and environmental tobacco smoke.
And I think that this is one of those things that is perhaps an important consideration that maybe, given that there is a prevalence for Māori and Pacific Islander and men to potentially be exposed to more carcinogens, that maybe there is an opportunity here to be particularly thorough about asking for that occupational history in these particular groups.
So we've talked about Māori and Pacific workers and men being most likely exposed to carcinogens. Have you got any thoughts, Amanda, particularly about why this is the case?
So the industries and occupations with the highest prevalence of exposure that Jim mentioned, so Māori and Pacific workers and men are overrepresented in those industries. But as well as that occupational distribution, our previous research has found that Māori have greater exposure to occupational risk factors than non-Māori, even within the same occupational title, which suggests a potential differential assignment of tasks, which we need to understand a bit more.
Jim, thinking about primary care physicians and occupations, so we've talked about asking someone's occupation. How do we ask questions about exposure? What are your tips and tricks for asking about that?
I'm actually back in general practice doing a few locums at the moment, and I'm finding that the questions that I need to ask about occupation routinely are what it is that you do for a job, and then what does that mean? Where do you do that job? So I ask for the location that they do that job in, and then what sort of things are you exposed to? I've been doing a variety of locums recently in a very urban environment, and so most of the time people have told me about their ergonomic issues and their exposure to a screen. But when I've been doing more rurally based locums, then people can talk to me about the sort of dust and dirt and various other chemicals that they may be exposed to when my ears start to prick up. And so it's those sort of questions. It's asking what they do and where they do it, for me, is a key starter questions to get an understanding of the sort of environment that these people are in, When I hear that it's a potentially dirty environment, then I can get far more detailed in some of the questions and perhaps ask specifically, is it a dirty environment? Do you have a lot of dust? Are you exposed to chemicals or do you use chemicals in a routine and regular way? And then obviously further questions down the track with regard to any protective equipment or protective processes or procedures that might be in place to help prevent exposure. But I guess that's my occupational physician background coming into play there as well. And this is stuff that I'm deeply familiar with. In a general practice setting, I think questions about what it is that a person does, and then seriously, some of the job titles that are available to people these days are certainly things that I've never heard of. Getting an idea of what that actually means and where they do that job, what the tasks are as a part of that job, is really important to get a potential understanding of whether further questions are going to need to be warranted about potential exposure.
And I suppose, as always, once you've got that information, you need to act on it. And I wonder if we can talk about that for a moment. So if we have a patient in front of us and we're concerned about their exposure at work, obviously more questions are important, but what else should we be doing, Jim?
I think it's particularly important if the person's presented with a complaint, which your questioning has led you to believe maybe work is playing a part here, then I think that an ACC form is a worthwhile thing to fill in that circumstance, because I think that that can help you and your patient maybe get access to further testing and investigations that you may require to be done. One of the more common presentations in general practice is dermatitis from an occupational source, and sometimes that can be really tricky to completely sort out. And, you know, having the ability to refer to a dermatologist and not inflict a profound bill on your patient is a nice thing with ACC coming to the party. So lung issues and the like can also be well followed up with regard to getting respiratory physicians involved in investigations, you know, which can these days go to things like high-resolution CT. These are not cheap investigations, and they may be required for people if they're presented with an asthma or a lung condition or a cough or whatever the condition happens to be. I guess my feeling would be if you're really concerned about an individual's exposure at work and you feel as though it may be a work-related condition that they are presenting with, filling in an ACC form is not a bad approach. Talking to the local specialist in that particular field and seeing whether or not they agree with you that maybe an occupational perspective is required is not a bad idea.
So with regards to why is it so important for primary care physicians to inquire about someone's occupation and exposure, obviously it's incredibly important at the individual level to ask about someone's occupation for the reasons that Jim's described. But from a population level, the inquiry and recording of this information is very important because we don't have the systems in place. We don't have good surveillance systems at the population level. There is no comprehensive notification system for occupational disease. We've got no dedicated public agency or public service for occupational health. And the recent accelerated silicosis pathway is really the first time in New Zealand where we've been actively looking for occupational disease. And that's set up within the ACC system, which is not ideal. That's why for the population level, it's important for primary care physicians to record that information. So I'm a big fan of utilising current data sources and asking, can we improve on what we currently have and use it to systematically and routinely analyse this data for population level surveillance. So WorkSafe have been working with Reach Aotearoa, which is an independent research company, to determine if a GP Sentinel surveillance system, such as their HealthStat program, which extracts data from a national random sample of 400 GP practices every week, could be expanded to implement an occupational health surveillance program. So a recent pilot study took a sample of that data, 500,000 anonymous records from a sample of 108 practices, And it found that the occupational field, the techs field in the patient management system, was more complete than they expected. So 92% of the records for patients aged 16 plus had that occupational techs field filled in. However, it is unclear how current the occupation is unless an ACC claim is made. And the current PMS systems don't seem to allow for the recording of occupational histories or changes in occupation over time. So it may be overwritten with the current occupation. The analysis also showed that about 46% could be mapped to statistical standard codes as well, job codes, due to the large number of entries that were retired or housewife or student. I think understanding and improving the recording of occupation and coding in primary care could be explored further. And that kind of leads back into the utilising current data resources and systems further.
She's absolutely right. Since I've left WorkSafe, I've lost my perspective a little bit on the systems-wide deficits that exist with regard to occupational health in New Zealand. But Amanda's absolutely hit upon a couple of them there, not the least of which we do not record nearly enough of this information. So the ACC forms, clumsy, but better than nothing.
Yes, and I think that's a good point, actually, Jim. I'm just sitting here thinking about lots of healthcare workers who have seen me over the years with the dermatitis from hand washing at work, and actually I've never filled in an ACC form for that. That's a practice changing point for me to take away today. So thank you both for bringing that up. So we've started talking now about the implications for public health and occupational health following this survey. So if we could wave a wand, what would we do now?
The carcinogen survey was a really important step to improve the collection of data, which is sorely lacking in Aotearoa. But it's crucial that work-related health remains at the forefront. As well as that, it is vitally important that the information is used for action. And while we always would like more data and surveillance, these findings suggest that preventive efforts should start with the most common carcinogens and the high-risk industries and occupations, and looking at interventions to reduce exposure. This is from a high-level perspective. And also, the survey found that high-exposure work is more commonly done by Māori. So we have previously suggested that Te Aka Whai Ora, the Māori Health Authority, be brought into the conversation about Māori-led solutions to reducing risk.
And Jim, some last thoughts and take-homes from you as to what needs to happen now?
Again, I endorse Amanda's comments. I think that reducing exposures to carcinogens means that in 30 years' time, we won't see the hundreds of lung cancers that we see now that are actually work-related, but they're not identified as such. And I feel that that is part of our problem currently. And that's why I would encourage all of our primary care health providers, if they have the opportunity to, particularly with lung cancer, if they have a lung cancer patient and they're concerned that that person may have had an exposure in their work over the years that could have contributed to it, obviously the first thing that springs to mind is asbestos, but there are other carcinogens that can cause lung cancer, that they fill in an ACC form for their lung cancer patient, even if they've been a smoker. Because if nothing else, this may give us some sort of handle on the number of people truly with a work-related lung cancer coming through the system now. And I think that that's important because that will actually help draw our attention to these issues, a true work-related issue. And I guess my other comments, my take-home message is, keep asking people what they do. Keep asking people where they do that job and what tasks are associated with it and what exposures might be there, because it might just trigger you as a physician, as a nurse practitioner, as an occupational therapist, as a physiotherapist. It might just trigger you to go, you know what? This could be a work-related health condition. Maybe we need to be thinking about it in those terms.
Fantastic. Well, thank you both for joining us today. It's been wonderful having you here and some excellent take-home learning points for me and I'm sure for our listeners. If you're a New Zealand GP and listening to this podcast, you can claim CPD points, so please log them. You'll find a list of resources that we've used in this podcast on our website, goodfellowunit.org. Thank you for joining us today.